for being here. We're so excited, our first meeting. We'll keep this a little bit informal. We're going to go through the agenda and talk through everything that we've included in new business. Just for the sake of the recording, I'll call to order this meeting of the Environmental Advisory Committee meeting. It's 4 o'clock on Thursday, October 14th. We are meeting in council chambers located at City Hall, 1207 Paul Boulevard. We'll call to order the meeting and acknowledge that the press and the public have been duly notified of the meeting in accordance with the Freedom of Information Act. We don't have any meeting minutes. At the next meeting, you all would be approving the minutes from today's meeting. We do not have anybody who signed up for citizen comments. Usually folks sign up ahead of the meeting, or they also can submit a written public comment that we'll distribute to all of you prior to the meeting. We do not have any old business, new business, introduction of committee meetings, committee members, city council liaison, and city staff. I'll start. I'm Desiree Fragoso. I'm the city administrator. Been here for about 6 years now. I'm city administrator for three. I work with Douglas. He is the building director and also the deputy administrator. Douglas, do we want to introduce yourself? Other than
you said
that?
It. Douglas, I have historically been across the hall at the planning and building department for a little over 20 years. We'll be transitioning upstairs, but look forward to working with this group, and I think it's an exciting new chapter for the city, so very excited about it.
Susan?
Why don't you guys go and then I'll go last.
I'm Molly Marino, and I'm a student at Accurate Grinding High School, and I've been a resident of Iowa Falls my whole life, and I'm excited to be here.
Welcome, Molly.
I'm Belvin Olsoff, born and raised in Isle Palms. I've been working as a climate change activist and advocate, co-founder of the Charleston Climate Coalition for about 2 years now. I'm looking forward to bringing things forward.
You were on the carbon sinks, weren't
you? Yeah, I was in the carbon sinks.
I was on there with you.
Commission, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that for the city of Charleston?
Yeah, climate action plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's worth noting that both of you were born, or are natives,
yes,
who have lived here, you know, on Isle Palms and grown up here your whole lives, right? So,
welcome. Thank you, Belvin.
In contrast to these two, I'm probably the newest resident of the island. I'm Jonathan Canuck. I moved here about a year ago, 13 months ago. I'm a physician. I originally trained in pediatrics and then did a second training in preventive medicine and public health. So I actually work for DHEC now. Right now, a lot of my time is taken up by COVID and vaccines in general. But before I came here, I worked as a county medical director in Michigan. They have a different structure compared to South Carolina. It's self-rules. It's a little different, but did a lot of stuff with lead and the wake of Flint and PFAS, PFOA, lots of different things like that, and kind of understand how media and some of those things can really take hold of environmental health issues, public health issues. So anyways, I'm happy to be here, and for me, environmental health is near and dear to my heart, and I've said to the folks at DHEC, they need to have a physician in the environmental health side. It's very siloed. We have the Department of Health and Environmental Control, and all the physicians were in the health side, but if something comes up from the environment, they usually call me because they're like, hey, you were in Michigan, you know something about the environment. So anyways, that's the glad to be here.
Michigan's leading in PFAS right now. They're setting a lot of the policy in the country.
Yeah, they're doing quite a bit. And DHEC, for its part, has its own interest group and is trying to do more. And I've been involved in some of those things. But yeah, there's a lot to be done.
To connect also.
Yeah.
I'm Debbie Ferris. I've lived on the island for about 3 years. And my background is, for most of my adult life, I've been a wildlife biologist in varying forms.
Welcome. Thank you, Deb.
I'm Mary Pringle.
Who doesn't know Mary?
Hey.
Internally.
I've been doing more samples off the pier for NOAA and also marine mammals strandings with NOAA, as well as lots of work with DNR in sea turtles.
about over 20 years now. Linda?
You're the lady. hi, I'm going to take this off so I can breathe. I'm Linda Plunkett, and in terms of tenure, I first set my toes on the Isle of Palms sand over 70 years ago. So it's been an important part of my history. I've been full-time resident here for over 20 years now. I've got a checkered past, including being a CPA, and I was a tenured professor at the College of Charleston in accounting. And for the last 20 years, I've been working in not the nonprofit area in philanthropy, including some environmental issues. I don't have the professional training that so many of you have, but I'm looking forward to working with you and learning a lot.
I'm Doug Hattler. I live on 27th. We've been here, the house since it's been going on our fourth year, over 4 years. First introduced to South Carolina back in the 90s. I was with the team that built the Roche Carolina plant in Florence. So my boys were born in Florence. They're South Carolina. I still got my Yankee accent back. But we went back up north, but my son went to the Citadel, and we came down to drop him off. We rented a house. And then we went, the third year, we went and looked at houses, and we bought the first one we saw. So we've been here. We'll be full-time residents beginning January 1st as my wife retires. She's a school teacher up north. I'm an environmental scientist and engineer. I started in hazardous waste and contaminated property cleanup. I've been a certified structural interior firefighter, emergency response. I've been in the pharmaceutical industry. I've done a lot of environmental services, information technology, and right now I'm working with a startup where I actually have a treatment unit that destroys PFAS. So I'm touched on a lot of different areas. I'm not like a wildlife biologist. I'm more of a man and man's, you know, impact on the environment, toxics and hazards. But I'm looking forward to being here. I'm looking for an opportunity to serve the community and, you know, getting to that point in your life where you want to give back to folks. And hopefully I stay off the road. I'll never miss 3 meetings in a row. but anyway, it's great to be here. I appreciate being selected to be on the committee. I look forward to working with you all.
Welcome. Thank you.
My name is Sandy. I won't have to take this down too. My name is Sandy Bretherton. I am a physical therapist by my original degree, and I am a professor of physical therapy at the Medical University of South Carolina for 2 months and 2 days until I retire. But it's counting.
My wife has one of those count-off days. You tear them off.
Yeah.
So I have been on the island almost 30 years. I moved here in 1993. And some of the things that I hope to bring to the committee, I've had lots of experience with teaching. I've been at the medical university in a faculty position for 31 years and have been a PT for actually 43 years. And so that's how I hope I can be a benefit. I've done some grants and things like that. So.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I'm Susan Smith, or Susan Hill Smith. I like to include my middle name. A lot of times it helps distinguish me from all the other Susan Smiths in the world. my background originally was in newspaper journalism. I previously worked for the Post and Courier. And more recently, you know, I've segued into corporate communications and healthcare communications, and also done some freelance magazine article writing. But then joined council. This is my fourth year. I'm cycling off at the end of this year. I'm going to take a little breather, at least for now, in terms of, you know, being on council. And I, you know, through my work on council, I have tried to bring new attention to environmental issues and have also helped create the Isle of Palms Cleanup Crew, which you guys might be familiar with. We, you know, along with Katrina Limbach, we founded this group, which is really a grassroots group of volunteers who just come out during the summer every week and help clean up and clean up the trash. And so we've really been trying to focus on the litter issue. And in the process, we probably picked up by now close to 70 to 75,000 pieces of trash in the past 4 years. We probably would have picked up more if it weren't for COVID. We didn't really do a lot last year with COVID, but just asked people to pick up on their own, so it wasn't really cataloged as well. But, you know, I was kind of pushing the creation of this committee, and my hope was that it would help keep environmental issues at the forefront, because we have a lot of issues competing for city council's attention and staff's attention. So I'm hoping that this committee will help keep it at the forefront, but also for you all to help do some of the work, or a lot of the work probably, in studying, coming up with solutions. And the great thing is, like, I didn't expect this many people to apply for the committee. We really had an amazing, you know, interest, but also you guys come with this, like, amazing set of expertise and experience, and so some of that work doesn't need to get done because you just come with that knowledge already at the table, which is fantastic. So we live on a barrier island. There's really only about 4,000 full-time residents, but we have a great responsibility, and it's also, you know, not only for our impact, but also the impact of all the visitors, the day visitors and the overnight visitors who also fill up this island. So there's lots of work to be done. Some big crisis issues that our world is facing right now that have a direct impact on our island, where we can also show leadership. And as far as my role as city council liaison, y'all just be doing this until the end of the year, but I'm excited to help get it kicked off. The city council liaison is not really here to direct the committee, but to facilitate and to report back and serve as a go-between with the full council and with staff. And, you know, otherwise, I do hope to be working with you, though, as the Isle of Palms cleanup crew leader, and we're hoping to take things up a notch in terms of our mission. And that will be easier for me next year. I'll have a little more time to devote to that. So thank you all for being here. It's just fantastic, and really excited to get you guys kicked off.
Yeah, thank you, Susan. Again, your leadership and council really made this happen. I will say I was not a believer at first. Usually when we have requests for volunteer opportunities, not a lot of people show up. And we've seen it in other initiatives, but with this one, we blew out of the water the amount of people that were interested in being part of it. And so, again, congratulations for being selected. And I know that this committee will do really great things for the city. So next meeting, just be prepared for you all to select a chair and a co-chair. That person will be responsible for leading the meeting. I'll do that today just to facilitate it, since we're now getting to know each other, and we'll have an opportunity to discuss later on priorities and what the committee would like to focus on and prioritize. That's going to be another just a piece of business that you all would have to do, and that chair will be in constant communication with us in setting the agenda. Everybody in the committee has an opportunity to submit requests to the chair for a particular item to be discussed, but usually the chair sets the agenda and then conducts the meeting. Yes, ma'am.
Question. May not be something anybody's thought about at this point, but if there's anybody who doesn't want to serve in the capacity of chair and co-chair, it might be good to know that before mm-hmm. the next meeting.
I'd prefer not to. Just
I was going to nominate you as the chair.
I'll sit on a chair. I just, with my work-life balance, I don't want to let people down, so I'm here to contribute, but I don't think I can take the leadership or even the
right
That's
now at this
good
point
to know.
In time.
Yeah, good.
To be fair to everybody.
Thank you. That's a great point, and I appreciate you bringing that up. But I think that that kind of conversation will help you all decide who wants to take the leadership role. And it's a process we usually do every year, so even though some of you are serving 2 years, 3 years, you'll have an opportunity to reevaluate that and change roles, give other people an opportunity to do the same.
And could I ask a question along those lines? It might help the group to know which of you has had experience in, say, running a meeting or chairing a, mm-hmm. you know, a council or a board or an advisory group. So, Belvin?
I do have experience running meetings and groups and
that's what I thought.
Task forces
yeah.
and such.
I have as well. I've chaired quite a few boards.
That's what I, yeah. You're, so.
Not that I'm campaigning.
I mean, I would think all of you probably have.
At some point.
The duties, just to be clear, of the chair and co-chair is purely meeting facilitation, or is there anything else to it?
Well, we don't know yet. We're a new committee.
It's usually facilitating the meeting, and it would be that point person that I would communicate to confirm the items on an agenda. Even though everybody would have the same opportunity, it's usually funneled through the chair.
Sure.
That's how we do it here. So basically that.
Okay, good enough.
Yeah. In any event where there's a report that would be given to council, the chair would usually take up that role. The liaison would as well. But if it's a recommendation coming from the committee, since the council liaison will not be a voting member of this advisory group, it would be the chair taking on that role.
Desiree, there's certain times of the year where it would not fit into my schedule, so I should probably bow out too. You know. And I'm kind of rusty on Robert's Rules of Order.
Well, yeah, Robert's Rules is a piece of it, but
yeah.
In this kind of setting, I think everybody will probably give each other grace mm-hmm. on that. But
yeah, it's a little
it's
bit
helpful.
More formal. We will have a presentation on Robert's Rules at the next meeting, just a quick refresher. How to make motions, second them, very simple. I mean, I don't expect this group to need to have a any more.
Nicole, keep
Nicole,
you straight. If you
yeah,
step
Nicole
out
will
line,
keep us straight. Yes.
We didn't give Nicole.
Oh yeah,
to,
Nicole.
Say hi to the.
Why
group.
Don't you introduce yourself?
I'm the city clerk, and I will be taking your minutes and telling you when I came here.
And when you do something. Contrary to Robert's Rules.
Correct.
Thank you, Nicole. Sorry.
Sorry.
All right, so well, let's move on to the next step, next item on the agenda, under new business. I wanted to do a quick refresher on the Freedom of Information Act. So this group would be required to be compliant with the same rules that the Freedom of Information Act sets for council and any boards and commissions of the city. That means that everything that this group does has to be done in public, and meetings need to be advertised at least 24 hours in advance. Our goal typically is at least 48 hours. Those minutes and those agendas and minutes and the meeting packets are posted on the website and distributed to the committee. Sometimes we can do it 24 hours before. That's what the law requires of us. Anytime there is a quorum, it's considered a meeting. Therefore, it has to be advertised within 24 hours and open to the public. So we do not we strongly encourage you all from not convening outside of this place or outside of a scheduled and advertised meeting. Yes, sir.
Is there, was it nine people? Is there, what's considered a quorum? Is it two, is it four?
A majority, so it's five.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So you could have conversations, and that's fine. And I think it might be helpful for work if you're going to be trying to put recommendations and do research together. If some of you were talking by phone or communicating, but it's good. It's better when it's smaller groups, but definitely not five of you. Like, you wouldn't want an email round robin to be going around with five of you.
Correct. And that's another point I was going to make. That also applies to email communication. So when I send an email to you all with the agenda or about a topic, please refrain from replying all. just reply to me or to Douglas, because a back and forth via email or text is considered, could be considered a meeting if there is a quorum. The minutes will be posted online as well. We will be sending you all information next week about an email address that we'll prepare for you. It's going to be an IOP.net email address. And what we would ask you is that if you're working on any city-related issue regarding the committee, to always communicate between you and the city using that email address. And the reason we do that is, again, everything that this committee does is public record, and we have to retain that, we have to protect that, and in the event of a FOIA request, that's information that needs to be produced. So in order to protect your personal email address from any type of, from being discoverable, we always provide an email address for you to facilitate conducting city business. It's going to be the first letter of your name and your address at IOP.net, and I'll send you all to your personal address the instructions of how to log in and set up your account. Certainly can help. If you have any questions, give us a call. You can come to City Hall. We can help you set it up. After that, after everybody's set up their accounts, all communications will only be directed to the IOP.net email address. So that's something that you're going to have to constantly be checking to make sure that you're receiving documentation or communications from us.
So we need to set up a new address on our computer.
We will provide you with that email address, and we'll give you a temporary password and the link of how you set it up and the instructions. And it's very straightforward, a couple steps. And that'll be your new email address that we ask that you, everything related to this committee, that you use that for communications. Any questions so far? It's pretty much it in terms of FOIA, what would apply to all of you. We only go into executive session if it's to, what would be relevant if it's to discuss any, receive any legal advice. If there's an environmental issue, that we have some legal questions, I'll know in advance and have our city attorney here with us, and at that point we would go into executive session. Anything that's discussed in executive session has to stay in executive session, cannot be shared with anybody else outside of the group.
Remind me, who's the city attorney now?
Brent Halverson? Halverson, H-A-L-V-E-R-S-A-N. S-E-N, I'm sorry.
S-E-N. Okay, sorry.
Okay, any questions? If y'all have any questions after this, you start noodling things, feel free to email me. You, no problem at all. Okay, next on the agenda, some tips for conducting effective meetings. This is something that I always like sharing with you. I share it with council at the beginning of the year, just some tips. So that we can stay on time. I want to be respectful of everybody's time. You're volunteering. We always have an agenda and try to be, again, efficient with time. So I'll just share it with you. Please come prepared. It's first thing I'll stress. understand what the meeting's purpose is. Review the information packet ahead of time. If you have any questions about it, do not hesitate to give me a call, send me an email. If there's something you don't understand about the agenda, something you don't understand about the packet, again, we are here to facilitate and help you through this process. Please maintain order. Know that a meeting should function under Robert's rules. We'll get some tips. We'll talk about that Robert's rules next at the next meeting. And just keep trying to follow the rules and procedures. Follow the agenda. Focus on issues, not personality. Sometimes topics can get somewhat emotional. We try to make sure that everybody's points and views are respected. And just, again, focus on the issues. Listen carefully, speak clearly and concisely, and please be courteous, fair, respectful, and avoid any personal remarks. All right. Any questions about that? Yes.
Grace Is it? We're missing a member, aren't we?
Yes, Grace Jurgella. She is in. She's traveling. She was not able to come today, and she did communicate with me.
Is she going to be zooming in or phoning in? Because she's in. Isn't she in California?
Yes, we will. For the next meeting, we'll be able to facilitate that, and she'll zoom in.
And is that possible for others in the committee? Should they be find themselves traveling unexpectedly or something like that?
Yes, that's something that we can facilitate. However, we don't encourage that to be I think extraneous circumstances, you're sick, certainly with COVID, we don't want to encourage anybody here if they have the sniffles. We'll facilitate that, but strongly encourage that you try to make the meeting as much as possible. We'll try to facilitate if not, but
hers is a special situation,
yes,
since
she is a student.
Involve mm-hmm. a college student, but she's attending school in California. So,
yeah. All right. Next on the agenda, review the purpose and goals of the Environmental Advisory Committee. I wanted to go back and restate just for our benefit to kind of get grounded on what we're trying to achieve here and what the instruction from City Council was. The goals of the Environmental Advisory Committee: protect the environment, endangered species, and natural resources, reduce litter and pollution, pursue energy conservation, develop environmental messaging and branding to promote best practices, support Isle of Palms as a strong environmental leader in South Carolina and a model for other coastal communities, develop and support partnerships with related community groups and stakeholders. One of the general conditions that I wanted to reemphasize, I know you all have seen the bylaws that have been established for this committee, is agree that you're serving without any compensation. This is a voluntary board. And the failure of any event member to attend 3 consecutive meetings, any misconduct or non-performance of duty may be cause for removal or the advisor of removal to City Council. And again, you all are not, the board has no authority to approve any expenditures. There's anything that the board needs, whether it's a recommendation for messaging or a particular initiative or program, that would be made as a recommendation that we, the staff, would bring forward to City Council through the Ways and Means Committee. So they would have to approve any expenditure that the board would need to have. So just for the record, I wanted to put that out there.
Desiree, do you anticipate meetings being once a month, or what kind of frequency are you looking at?
So that's something that we're going to talk under miscellaneous business, because that was not established early on. It's going to be up to the group and up to depending on how much work you all have. I suspect that if you're working on a project and you have a deadline to make a recommendation to City Council, you might meet more frequently, or you might meet every month, or it could be every other month. At a minimum, I think we had established at least once every other month.
Every other month.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And we also want to talk about what time of the day. I know we tried by the Survey Monkey a couple of times to get something that worked for everyone. So we'll talk about that later on the agenda. Yes,
this
ma'am.
May not be a good time to interrupt. I heard you about any expenditure requests or budgetary items we need would go through council.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, should we become aware of any grant opportunities or possibilities for the city to apply for funding for a certain environmental project?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same process through the Ways and Means Committee?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. But you could discuss it.
You could
initiate
correct.
That discussion
right. I mean,
here.
It would come from this committee,
and then,
but it would go through Ways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If there's a matching component, for example, there's a grant program and it's 60-40, and you all want to recommend the city to commit to the 40 so that we can pursue and submit a grant, it would happen at the same way.
Likewise, if the city council becomes aware of a grant or an issue that has an environmental component.
Yes.
The courteous thing would be to bring it to this
Absolutely.
Committee. We don't have the authority, but is that to be expected?
Yes,
that they would come here first?
Mm-hmm. I think on the whole, I mean, for example, I think some people consider drainage an environmental mm-hmm. matter, and it is to some degree, but there's a lot going on with drainage that is not going to go
right.
through this committee. I mean, that's something that the Planning Commission is really involved in, and so I think in some ways it makes it easier to kind of silo that over there. So that would be one case.
As long as we're in the loop.
Yeah.
Yes, and we would serve as that connection between
okay.
City Council and the committee, as well as the council liaison. Oftentimes, City Council will look at us for advice on, you know, we have this issue and this project, we want somebody to look at it. Then, you know, we'll discuss and say, okay, this really is an issue that the Planning Commission falls within the Planning Commission's mission. The newly created Environmental Advisory Board is something that and we would bring that forward to you all and say, this is something that came from a discussion on council. We'd like for you all to take this on, and whether there are any stated goals from council in terms of a deadline or what they're trying to look, it would be us communicating that to all of you. All right, and then, so the next item on our agenda is an open discussion of action items to meet goals of the committee. And I know that Susan had prepared some talking points and she wanted to maybe help guide the discussion for the committee to start.
Yeah, I mean, I was just, in this starting moment, thought that I could go through some areas where if you wanted to try and narrow down what you were going to do first or do in the first 6 months, I've made a list of things that I think are areas that you might consider. So I'm not here to dictate, and I don't have any direction from the rest of council to, you know, encourage you to do any of these particular items, but these are things that I think could be on your radar.
And I think it'd be helpful for her to share those with you, and then after you all entertain a discussion about what maybe a couple of priorities that you would like to spend your time on for the next 6 months, for the next year, and start prioritizing that way.
And so I've organized this, and I'll just read through it, and then maybe a copy of this could be
mm-hmm.
given to you guys, you know, for reference, so you don't feel like you have to take a bunch of notes. But these are kind of topically grouped with some, you know, corresponding items underneath it. But you know, one topic is energy use and considering how the city can reduce pollution and its own carbon footprint and lead others in the community to reduce their carbon footprints and pollution output. So some items along those lines that you might look at would be increased energy efficiency in city buildings, possible retrofitting. Some of those things I think are going on actually already, but maybe there's more opportunities there. One thing I've kind of brought up occasionally, and we haven't really gone very far with it, is do we have any solar power opportunities, retrofitting that could be, well, maybe not retrofitting might not be the right word there, but that could be done related to city facilities and buildings. Looking at transitioning more to electric or hybrid or other alternative vehicles and methods of transportation, both with city vehicles, and then it has come up, and you could speak a little bit more to this, that city staff was looking into, was it a grant around electric charging stations?
It's a program from Dominion Energy where they provide the equipment and the maintenance for a small fee, and we had looked into the installation of those down at Front Beach, as and it's something that we decided to bring forward to this group as part of your goals.
So we did, okay. Yes. We're on the same page.
can I ask one question real quick? Do we have any charging stations on the island?
No, we do not.
So Wild Dunes doesn't have anything either? Have we checked in with them?
I don't believe they do.
Okay. It'd be interesting to see if they have any plants along
this line. Do you know?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any.
They would have
it. We could have added one with the new hotel.
The new hotel seems like it
should.
Should or maybe, yeah. But I am unaware if they do.
Okay. And another thought, which I've seen in the Post and Courier has covered recently, was maybe reducing impact from landscaping equipment like leaf blowers, which you could also look at the noise pollution aspect of that as well.
Public health.
And public health.
I'd say it's maybe a bigger factor even in the carbon emissions.
Yeah. So and some of these overlap, right? So, you know, you could be making improvements in several areas by making one change. And then, so separately, but kind of related, would be leadership on climate change, in investigating, tracking, documenting the connection between climate change and sea level rise and disruptive weather on our own community, and then promoting change at the state, local, regional, state level because of that impact and our, you know, unique position of being on kind of on the front lines of impact from climate change. And although truly there's no community that's not going to feel the impact of climate change in one way or another around the world. Another issue would be litter, trash, and waste, which I, you know, am very familiar with now. One thing that I think we've got to do in terms of next steps, you may be familiar that we passed some laws around what people can do on the beach and no smoking now. Also, we passed some laws about what people can use in terms of packaging. We, council, effectively in our ordinances have that you're not supposed to bring retail plastic bags to the beach. You're not along with straws, stirrers, any styrofoam container, balloons. And am I leaving anything out?
Plastic straws,
yeah. And then two, but even before that, they had asked retail businesses not to do plastic bags, but also they tightened up.
Mm-hmm. They're also prohibited from just using styrofoam containers and non-recyclable plastic.
And including straws, right? Correct. So there's, but on the flip side, I'm not sure if we've been super effective in terms of really getting the message out. I mean, we're going in that direction and we're trying to do some things. The CVB, the Charleston Visitors Bureau put together recently more of an area campaign to alert people to these changes, not just in our laws, but also Sullivan's Island and Folly. All of our laws are a little bit different, so they did a pretty good job of like hitting the highlights that apply to everybody and then directing people to each municipality's own set of rules on their website. But there's a lot more, I think, to be done along those lines in terms of making sure people know that these changes even exist. And also making sure that, you know, we're doing at least warning people who are not adhering and working with our businesses to make sure that they're living up to their part of the law. I have recently heard that maybe some of them aren't necessarily. We can't police that all the time. But so we need to figure out how you're going to do that. And make sure that people are paying attention to the laws and trying to live up to it. And we could be doing that, like Isle of Palms Cleanup Crew. I hope we can be a resource and help in that regard. And I think South Carolina Aquarium or other partners, along with the businesses, that I think we can help get their energy behind it. Let's see. The beach litter, trash, as much as we've done, is a conundrum in terms of how to really like make significant headway in behavior. And
Susan, would you say, and I don't know, but obviously you've researched it, is that are visitors to our island, also called day trippers, the major problem with the litter on the beach, or do you find it's residential and visitor?
So I'd say where you have people, you have trash, and the more people you have, the more trash you have. So clearly Front Beach is a magnet for the most people, but also Wild Dunes, I know they have some significant trash issues up at the Grand Pavilion, where there's a lot of visitors who are overnight visitors.
Yeah.
So I'd say it's just really the trash seems to go with the people.
Well, it would depend on how we address the issues and mm-hmm. opportunities.
Right, right. I'd say residents on the whole are maybe more aware mm-hmm. because it gets talked a lot about in our social media and that kind of thing. But that's a good question, you know, and one that our trash statistics that they've been gathering help, but then there's a lot of variables too that go with that. So, let's see. I think it would be worth, you know, talking to the county about more about recycling. And how that's going, how we can help make that a success, because I feel like there's been a lot of challenges with their program and whether it's really working. Composting was not something that we've really talked about that much, but might be worth talking about, as well as, in tangent with that, just in general, promoting Isle of Palms as an environmental leader. As a tourism strategy, which kind of ties in with the CVB campaign, that in that campaign you're not only encouraging people to be clean and not litter, but you're also attracting people to the area who have that same sentiment and want to be in a place where people are taking care of the environment. That's a win in a variety of ways. So, and then another big concept would be protecting ecosystems, native species, and endangered wildlife, which I know is looking at you, Mary Pringle.
All right,
and Deb. I mean, everybody here, I'm sure, has that sentiment. But it seems to me that people are getting a little bit more lax on the lights out, which has been around for a while now and has been a really successful campaign.
We've had that ordinance for about 15 years, and it never, I don't think, has ever one ticket been written.
Okay.
For people who violate it. Usually we get the lights turned off.
Okay.
But every once in a while we find a group in a house who say, hell, we paid $15,000 a week and we're going to have lights on if we want to. And we call the police, and then if nothing happens, I mean, they'll come and tell them to turn it off, but it's just kind of frustrating.
Okay. So, and it seems to me like some of the, maybe condos or hotels, that they're keeping their lights on, maybe.
Yeah.
I just happened to notice that when I was out one night.
Yeah, that happens. And Wild Dunes, the problem is the beach is not suitable for nests anyway. So I hate to say we've just given up on that
fight okay.
with the lights, but we have to get the nests out of that wide, flat beach anyhow, so
okay.
We can't get all those lights turned on. And something I've been talking to Desiree about is the Dominion, a person on, a resident of Sullivan's Island contacted me because the Dominion person was there saying, we're going to put bright white LED lights up on Front Beach and it's good. We don't care about turtles. And I panicked and I thought, is this mandatory? But Desiree said it's something the city doesn't have to do, that Dominion is...
It's an incentive program that Dominion Energy has for municipalities that want to replace their existing lights, non-decorative lights, with LED.
Oh, holiday lights?
No.
Street lights.
Oh, street lights that are non-decorative. And that's
okay.
just something that if we wanted to do that, but they, when I talked to them, they did say that they have turtle safe lights.
They have an option that costs more money that the city would have to approve for the
mm-hmm.
front beach
mm-hmm.
roads, so that's just something that
Yeah.
Well, and that might be an area where this committee could be a voice to encourage and make a case for, I'm not sure how much more money it is, but let's see. And then, so that's where an area where working with the Turtle Team, like there's a lot of potential partners in all of this. The Turtle Team is certainly one, and South Carolina Aquarium has a great relationship with the city as well. There's been an issue that I have heard about, kind of not through official channels, but that about migrating birds at Breach Inlet and a desire that might be out there to create an area that's protected from, like a no, we have the dog leash, off leash hours for dogs, but some encouragement that I've heard for not that carving out at least the area at Breach Inlet so dogs are not allowed to be off leash because they can disturb migrating and nesting birds.
Audubon has a really good shorebird stewards program that they train people who go out there. They mostly do it on Dewey's, but they're talking about having more.
And that's what I had heard, that Audubon, there was some interest from Audubon, but I hadn't really ever gotten to hear from the right person about it.
They have a guy that's really good at it.
And my understanding is that area is a good spot, that Breach Inlet, I'm not sure why, but the geography makes it a good spot for birds. And, you know, for all that we've heard about the maritime forest on Sullivan's Island, maybe we have a similar role to play in helping birds. Encouraging landscaping that supports native plants and offering smart strategies for tree placement. We had this come up with Dominion, as you may have been familiar, that in addition to trimming the oak trees, which upsets a lot of people, they also had to cut down a lot of palmetto trees this last round, or palm trees. And part of that is that they're not planted in good spots. And so there's maybe an education piece of that to help people understand where is a good place to plant a tree, so that the palmetto trees, you can't really move them very easily, I've learned. And, they grow pretty fast, and when they get tangled up in the power lines, they're a hazard. So there's not a lot of options. A question of mine that has come up is about artificial turf, and I don't know if anybody here has thought about that at all, but I have started to look into a little bit because I've noticed some neighbors adding it. Whether that's a good or a bad thing, I'm not sure. At the very least, it seems like there might be some guidance that the city could provide along those lines. I have heard read that when artificial turf is put down, it can prevent other things from growing there for a very long time, even if it's pulled up.
Plus and the water runoff too.
That's what I was going to say, the water runoff.
They also put an underlayer of, I don't even know if you could really call it sand. It's like a lower grade of dirt even than sand, and it is set, and it tends to wash out from underneath the turf. It's a problem.
So, and it seems
Wild Dunes did not allow it for a while. Are they allowing it now? Does anybody know?
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't think we have any restrictions over it.
But we have no control over Wild Dunes anyway, do we?
Yeah, they may be adding that in their covenants, but
no, this isn't in Wild Dunes.
Okay,
we have noticed this.
I've noticed it becoming more popular.
Yeah.
Is what I've noticed, and it's kind of, I get, you know, makes me think of the Lorax a little bit, you know, that sentiment of making everything artificial. I think there are some arguments pro-environment in that you don't need pesticides and all the things that you need to grow grass that aren't necessarily great for the environment either, but there's probably some room for conversation around it. And the other thing, too, is evidently it gets really hot. So it's difficult for people and I'm sure animals to.
Is it a petroleum product?
Probably.
It depends. I mean, the ones they have like professional fields. Mm-hmm. They had the rubberized material that they put in it. I don't know much about them.
Really? So maybe, you know, something that kind of fits under, I mean, is that healthy overall for our environment and ecosystems? And then water quality, you guys may be familiar with the Nurdle issue, plastic pellet industry. We actually have, and I was totally unfamiliar until plastic pellets started to wash up on Sullivan's Island beach, that we have a pretty big number of plastic pellet providers that use a port. And that industry worldwide does a lot of polluting. And once those plastic pellets get into the ocean, like either through spills when they're unloading, offloading onto big ship cargo ships, or I think even sometimes those cargo containers fall off into the ocean, they're creating a lot of pollution, and it's a pollution that's almost impossible to clean up because the pellets are so small. So the plastic pellets are used to melt down and create other things, plastic things, which can be good things, could be unnecessary things, depending on your perspective, but I'm sure good things too. But
plastic was a good idea. It's not playing out very well.
Especially in the oceans. I mean, microplastics, not just from nurdles, but mm-hmm. microplastics are a big problem.
I'm doing a research project on that right now.
Are you doing a project on that? Yeah.
It's
a
big problem. Like the PFAS.
And there's really no way to mitigate it either, because how can you make such a widespread thing?
Mm-hmm.
The key is really prevention.
Can we ask, what is PFAS?
They're long chain, they're organic molecules, long chain that contain fluorine in them. Mm-hmm. They're fluorinated. They're very, very persistent, so they're in the class of like a dioxin, a PCB. They're used extensively for non-stick surfaces. So frying pans,
Teflon,
pizza boxes.
So what cheese ones stick to the pizza box?
There's a debate. There's anywhere from 4,000 to 8,000 known, and then there might even be more that are unknown. But it's the one of the latest concerns right now.
What is the acronym there?
PFAS, and that's all caps, and that's the acronym that represents a whole family of those perchloroalkyl. I just remember PFAS, but the chemical name is awkward to say.
Okay, great.
But that's a water quality issue. I mean, do we have it here? You know, the big debate is, it's not being mandated to sample right now, but should you sample and get ahead of it?
So how does it get in waterways? Like Teflon, how would that end up? Is there a
landfill
link that we know about?
Landfills, your pizza box, and your garbage can. I mean, that stuff, it just gets everywhere.
So a pizza box gets rained on, and it gets out there?
Could be, yeah. It's
in the landfill, or?
Yeah, landfill leachates, or the stuff that drains through the landfills, which you collect underneath.
Right.
So it's one of what they call emerging contaminants. And I also call them forever chemicals. But it reminds me a lot of, back in the PCB days when I first got into business. But this is much more prolific.
And water quality is an issue that the city doesn't do too much with. But DHEC does do some testing and reports back to us. Waterkeepers is a volunteer group that might be worth, partnering with if you all wanted to do more on this topic, not just in terms of ocean, but also intercoastal and creeks.
You know, just runoff and stormwater and that. And runoff, that's where a lot of the pollution comes from nowadays.
I have heard it suggested that, there should be some concern about the port in terms of the big ships and the discharge that they let out.
Ballast water that they release,
cruise ships. And
cruise ships.
Mm-hmm. The gray water.
Because that all washes our way.
I was reading the news, I think it was earlier this week, might have been the Post and Courier, about some of the issues of the water around James Island and their septic tanks leaking.
I saw that too.
Has that been an issue for IOP that you're aware? I've only been here a year, so I don't know if that's been an issue or something that's been discussed already about.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we haven't done a whole bunch of monitoring to know.
At least one of the candidates is making septic tank use a discussion.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Thing.
I mean, yes.
So it's
yeah,
on
true.
The radar for somebody.
Well, yeah, but I take that back. There was some work done at that.
It has been, so once you're outside of Wild Dunes, the probably at least half of the houses outside of Wild Dunes, probably more like 70% are on septic systems. It has been, if you're outside of Wild Dunes, there's a good chance you're on a septic system. There has been a long-running concern about it. The city has, you get into, I know we'll get into it eventually, but city has a water and sewer commission that's separate but kind of linked through funding. And we try our best to kind of work, they're right across the street, so we try to work across the street as best we can on a long-range plan. There's kind of been interest in a long-range plan that would get public sewer extended throughout the entire island and eliminate all of the septic systems, because it's seen as a thing that, it's probably not this year, next year, the year after that, but at some point we feel like being as low as we are, as close to the ocean as we are, groundwater coming up, sea level, all of these things kind of colliding, we feel like there is going to be a point when somebody is going to say, no more septic systems. You just can't do it anymore. So we've tried to kind of start that snowball rolling down the hill, but it's always been the funding. It turns out to be about a $50 million project. You divide it among the residents, it's only 1,400, I think, hookups that $50 million gets you. So the cost per hookup is just kind of eye-watering, and it becomes so emotional because of the cost, really, that it's never really gotten traction to move forward. There's a lot of, I think the staff thinks that with the funds that are currently held at the state level for infrastructure projects, that we could kind of be in this perfect storm of money that we could just take a big chunk out of the $50 million. And once we can get over that big hurdle, it then is just it's fairly easy process to build the lines and do that stuff is easy. It's just the money. So we have been hopeful that we'll...
Have they looked at financing or a bond or...
We have, this
is near and dear. I stopped by the water and sewer yesterday and said, I'm thinking about, and I said, and what I'm hearing, I first heard 2025, now I'm hearing it's $35,000 to $40,000. And, I'll spend 2025, $40,000 with no return on investment. I'm going to go get my septic pumped every 2 or 3 years.
And even that is a grinder system.
Just as an example, and this one's going to be one that I'm going to probably bring up because I think this is an important thing. Because I've always been around lakes and water, you can go there's an Anderson Renewal. You can get a 0% interest, and you can replace all your windows. So what do you need to do? It's a financing mechanism. So that's another option. I don't know if we've all looked into that, but
kind of every way you can. And I don't know what the number when you divide $50 million by. I should be able to do that math, but I can't. But it's a big number. And kind of no matter how you divide it, it always creates this emotional reaction of, I'm just not interested. And in addition to that amount to do it, you have your monthly doubling of your water bill. So it does not get a lot of traction. Never has, and I think it's always that.
I'll just say one last thing. The irony is, you'll spend $3 on gas, but you don't want to spend more than a penny, even more than 10 cents, or it's actually like, I think a cent on water, on a gallon of water.
Yeah.
It's crazy, our mentality.
And it is it's complicated in that when somebody wants to get on sewer, they try to, because it's expensive to get a line pulled out to them, a lot of times they'll try to do it as cheaply as possible. So you have like a spider network of low capacity lines.
Yeah, that's what you were getting quoted, was a little tiny pressurized ground up waistline. You know, the grinds up the way.
Yeah. With the grinder pump, too, right? Which the grinder pumps have their own. So, I mean, for those that really want to see island-wide sewer or help us get as close as possible, the idea that you try to do it so one person doesn't have to shoulder a really, but you collectively are doing it to help share the costs.
Yeah.
That's the philosophy behind it. But there's a lot of, as Douglas mentioned,
one final kind of issue that comes out of that discussion is that, and going back to the monitoring, you know, that the Planning Commission spent significant time and collected the data, the monitoring that was done, and the water sampling data that was available. And basically it found that the water quality levels of the ditches going out of the back were generally acceptable. They didn't indicate that there was a problem at this stage. And it's now probably been 15 to 20 years ago that there was a certain amount of fecal coliform bacteria in there. It was, you know, the city kind of went up the sampling, the DNA sampling chain, and found out that something like 85-90% of it was wildlife.
Yeah.
So at that point, it was, you know, the incentive to do it from a water quality perspective was very low at that point. We have not gone back up the chain of, you know, testing the DNA, but the amount of pollutants going back is similar to what it was at the time of that study. So we kind of
20 years ago.
Yeah, it's roughly 15, 20 years.
The challenge you're going to have in this community with this one, and this is one of my. I won't go too long because I know we're getting late, but you got very sandy soils that drain real well here. So you know, a lot of that contaminant, any of that water is coming from a leach field or a septic, is probably going down. So you're going to find there's more likelihood to find contamination in the groundwater wells if we're pulling up groundwater or other shallow groundwater wells. The surface water runoff isn't going to be as great. Now, if you get flooding situations now where you've got standing water for a while, and I've got my leach field is puddled for several weeks. Now you're going to, because you can't perk, then you might start to see. But generally speaking,
when
you see that, but generally speaking, you know, these soils are going to drain, so a lot of it, if there's any fecal coliform or any of that stuff, it's going to go down into
the water. The Water and Sewer Commission has actually just started because they are trying to get support for getting some of this funding. They have started testing puddles, you know, the puddles that are standing for a long time. They're doing water quality tests of the puddles. They are showing pretty high levels of bacteria, but you kind of go back to the very early in doing that.
You get a lot of dog. There's other things too, you know, that can help. And water quality is my thing, so I'll be quiet shortly, I promise. We'll have plenty of time to talk about it. But even things that I don't know if you looked at, you know, porous driveways, porous asphalt, changing specifications for the roads, so you're putting in more porous materials helps. That'll help drive the runoff down, which has less. That'll help with mosquitoes. It'll help with that issue. So there's a lot of cause and effect that you can look at. You know, this is a small town. You wouldn't necessarily put together a best management plan or a stormwater pollution prevention plan because it's not required by law, but it is a best practice. It is something that we could decide that we want to do. And it really, when you look at a best management practice plan, it's just publishing the best practices and encouraging people to do the best practices, giving them a manual of practice, educating the developers particularly, you know, and the paving companies and all those folks. So there's all that whole side of it. Because it's definitely, it's all linked. Water's all linked. It's a hydrologic cycle. So.
Excellent. So, well, with that, I think I'll just hand off to you all to have further conversation, unless you want to give some guidance.
I just want to give you all an opportunity to maybe discuss, have any reaction to some of the topics and issues that have been mentioned, and we want to facilitate a conversation for all of you. I know it's 5:10 now, and I don't know what. If
the one we didn't talk about was air, air pollution, air emissions. I think probably we don't have any real manufacturing here. We probably had some grease traps and air coming from restaurants, but vehicle hotspots. You know, see if carbon and GHG is probably the bigger deal, because we create in the summertime and in the tourist season hotspots. So encouraging, and this plays to the parking thing. We can somehow really get people to do more carpooling, get people to use this bus. I mean, yeah, I have concerns. Do I want people getting dropped off on 27th? Because my beach is pretty quiet compared to Front Beach. You get into those issues. But, you know, keeping traffic off the island because, you know, not because we don't want people coming, but because there's other ways to get here. You're going to keep down the GHG hotspots. You're not going to be so concerned about the emergency access, which is a big deal now because the DOT went and painted the lines and all that stuff. So,
well, and that,
so air emissions, that yeah. piece of it, I think, the transient mobile emissions.
CARTA had a pilot program, mm-hmm. right, for a bus, and that was fairly unsuccessful. Is that right?
So
we didn't.
Yeah. Anything that requires human behavior and change of human behavior is very difficult.
Right, and this is just the first run.
Yes.
Correct, yeah. I mean, our goal is to continue. You know, obviously the ridership numbers weren't as high as we would have liked, but it's just a cultural shift of getting people to behave differently and think differently and plan differently when they're coming to the beach.
Right.
So it was the first year that we did this, and an initiative that I hope and will encourage City Council to continue to support
It's
for
a
next
tough
season.
One. I mean, look at California. California is one of the most progressive states, and you're from Michigan. Michigan does well too, but they can't keep the cars off the road. You know, they can't. It's a very difficult one. But air is another one that we had to talk about.
And maybe this committee could have a role in looking at the CARTA setup and giving some suggestions about how that could be more successful in terms of the numbers and.
Sure.
You know, I mentioned at a meeting, but I'm not sure how much they were actively, like, going to the hotels and getting them, because we have, I mean, part of our issue with numbers of people coming over is that they've created a bunch of hotels right off the, on the other side of the connector. If they were encouraging people to use the shuttle and mentioning to them that they might even be able to avoid renting a car when they come visit if they did that. You know, if we could get some traction there, that might be helpful.
Did council talk with CARTA as a program was coming together? Was there conversation, or did CARTA just do it?
Yeah, no, that was an initiative that we worked at the staff level and the public safety committee with CARTA.
Great.
In the development. There were some limitations about how quickly we wanted to get the project off to, you know, kicked off, and availability with the vehicles that they had readily available. So we had to work within some existing constraints that made some things more difficult. But that's something that we certainly would want to work ahead of time before the next season.
Okay.
I personally get to have a meeting at 5:30, so I'm going to have to leave before. But I'd like to, I guess, we don't know Robert's rules yet, but I guess it may be a motion. I'm not sure how we do it. I was just going to suggest, you know, maybe coming to the next meeting, let's all write down our top three or top three priorities.
Mm-hmm.
Because my experience, and if you know Ginny Rometty, who used to run IBM, she was always three things. You can only do 3 to 5 things.
Mm-hmm.
So if we all maybe make a list of 3 to 5 of our top priorities, we put them all in the pool, we maybe vote them out,
mm-hmm.
and then we decide what the number is. Is it 3? Is it 5? Is it 7? But it's more productive to do 5 things really, really well
mm-hmm.
than to do 10 things.
Yeah.
Half,
well, that's yeah.
Half
that's
cost.
Certainly the goal that you all prioritize, because we can't do it all. You have several years, but yeah, that way you can focus on those issues that are more pressing for the committee and for this community.
So just a suggestion, maybe everybody write down your top 5 of things that most important.
Maybe that can be your first test email from the new
yes.
email that Desiree is going to send to you. You respond back.
Send back your 5. It would be considered a meeting.
Just send it to her.
Just send it to me.
So send it. Don't reply at all. Just send it to Desiree.
So top 3 priorities, top 5.
And then we can bring them categorized already.
Right. So we'll do that. Then you'll have a list to bring to the next meeting. We'll elect a chair and a chairperson, and then they can take order.
So I'll just interject. Would you be talking about kind of the broader, like, energy use, litter, trash, waste, or be more specific about initiatives?
I think very specific.
They have to be
actionable.
The whole smart thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want us to look at short term and long term? Because some things might be able to be implemented in, you know, a fairly short amount of time, but other things would probably take years.
I would let you all you know, if you want to categorize yours as short-term and long-term, certainly that would be easy when you're all reviewing what to tackle first. But yeah, that could be, you know, rather than spending a lot of time talking about 100 different issues at this point, we can, you know, maybe talk about the next meeting and then have an expectation for you all to review what all those priorities are, and your first action item will be to just establish what those three, top three or top five are for the next meeting.
Would Susan's starting list be a good launching point? So maybe the first email out is that?
Yeah, I was going to ask if anyone else had anything. That was a great, pretty comprehensive list. But I was wondering if anyone else had something that they wanted to throw out so people can think about it.
You mentioned the air quality.
Air is the one that you know, I always think of air, water, waste, biota. You know,
So I'll distribute this list to all of you tomorrow so you can start noodling on it as you develop your list of priorities. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, so my only suggestion would be a framework for approaching the reducing our carbon footprint item could be looking at the City of Charleston's Climate Action Plan and looking into adapting it. It has five different categories in it: buildings, transportation, waste, carbon sinks, which is another way of saying marsh and trees and, you know, natural, and education is the fifth one. So looking at what they put together and seeing how we can adapt it.
One of our recommendations, we were on one of the subcommittees, one of the recommendations that came up was they don't have jurisdiction outside of the City of Charleston, but we kept saying, you know, I brought up the idea of, you know, they're cutting down the marsh grass in Sullivan's Island. This is all one ecosystem. What you do in Sullivan's Island impacts Charleston. So the discussion was, well, how do we get some of the local communities? So maybe this becomes a Dr. Isle of Palms, that if we want to be a leader, we can be working aligned with what City of Charleston is doing, and then perhaps we get a little envy from Sullivan's Island and some of the others, and we start to create that.
Exactly, yeah. One plan is one thing, but two plans is a trend. And that could be very impactful, actually.
Yeah, glad you brought that up, because that was important.
And we don't have to start from zero.
Exactly.
We've done so much of the work and have recommendations embedded
along.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good suggestions.
Thank you.
Yeah. Excellent.
Along those lines, I mean, I've been thinking about this too, preparing is, you know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel on most of this stuff. The work is done. It's a matter of gathering the information and resources and, you know, tweaking it to suit us. And in particular, there's so much already in place on island communities, you know, that, you know, there are things that are specific to living on an island. It's just time and research to, rather than trying to create it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there. It's a matter of finding it.
Dewey's Island has done a lot.
They have.
We might be able to get some of their information.
Do we have a web page? Are we going to have a web page?
The environmental advisory? Yes, you do have a page on our website under the boards and commissions homepage.
There's an example. Short-term project could be start creating a clearinghouse information form. That's a short-term project. Where a long-term project is rewrite the ordinances around paving, we'll include, you know. So that's an example. Like you're saying, a little project you can do now versus things that are going to take years.
You could be the chair.
Well, I'd love to if I was retired, but I'm back in sales again.
You're on the road.
I wouldn't want to let people down.
That's great, though. You're right. You're exactly right. The Environmental Advisory Committee page could become like a great clearinghouse of educational
and really off resource. What's your first name?
Belvin.
Said, because they have a climate action page, they have the sustainability page.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much information there that we might even be able to, just like you do when you go recycling, you just hit the link to the county page.
Right. And the city also has an ambassador program they just started, Climate Ambassadors, where people do presentations on the Climate Action Plan to various groups and organizations, community groups.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So we could have one of them come to your
absolutely. And maybe
meeting
down the line,
that's
a model we could offer for education, is just volunteers.
I'm sure if we planned ahead, Katie would even probably come in and present and talk about the sustainability initiatives. She's the director of sustainability.
Yeah,
you know,
for Charles.
She probably would come in and love to talk about it.
Absolutely.
With all due respect.
Well, I think we're ready to set up the next meeting if it's okay with all of you. I was, just as a suggestion, how does the Thursday, so that we get Thursday afternoons work? Thursday the 18th, November 18th. Does that work for everyone? Do you all like the 4 o'clock? Do you want to do earlier, later?
I thought the time was good.
4 o'clock is good.
Yeah. 4 o'clock is good for me.
Not earlier.
So November 18th.
Doesn't cut too much into the cocktail hour.
November 18th at 4 o'clock.
Okay.
Okay. We don't have any miscellaneous business. And I'll just adjourn the meeting. It is 5:20.
Thank you all for investing in this.
Thank you for initiating this.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Good call.
Thanks.
No,
nice to meet you all.
I can respond. We can put the audio on.